fictional
Sure. Let me just ask Bertha a quick couple of quick questions, and then we'll let you go to it. You were saying that that sometimes more than one family would be together in the wintertime. How many families usually would there be in one place if there was more than one?
About two or three, I think. I don't think it was more than two or three. Mostly two, here and there.
Now, would that be, would that usually be people who were related or just people who were friends? Or how did those...
Either way, related and friends.
Was that, did the relationship between the two men in those families have a lot to do with that? Or how was that determined? Did those men hunt as partners or trap as partners?
They hunt as partners. And then the women stay in the camp or help or snare rabbit and do things.
Did your camp have a particular name, your winter camp?
Our winter camp was up Alatna River. My dad had a little cabin. We call it Tupkorak. And other times when I was older, we stay around Blackjack. But I remember when I was real small, we stayed in winter camp with Billy and Caesar Berkman. That's Johnson's parents. And they had only two boys then. Both of them were younger than Johnson. And I think my mother and dad had about six kids then. Around six of us that time. I barely remember that time. I must have been about 4 years old that time, could be about 4 or 5 years old. Maybe I was 4 years old because I had two younger sisters then.
I didn't ask you earlier, what year were you born?
1930.
So you're a little bit younger than Johnson. A
little bit, yeah. Not much.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I had six sisters and three brothers, and now there's eight of us living. I have five sisters and two brothers living.
Wow, that's a big family.
Yes, that's a big family to survive the time when people were dying off with TB. And my mother she went to school, and I guess she learned a lot about health in the from the missionaries there, because there was a nurse there. And she used to try to keep us away from people who were sick. Like when our uncle was sick, my mother's brother, she wouldn't let us go visit their house. And if our cousins were sick with TB, she wouldn't let us. We lost one sister and one brother after our mother died. They both died of pneumonia. So I guess it was kind of unusual for a big family to survive that time. But it was, I think it had a lot to do with us living in camp and kind of isolated a lot.
When we were talking about your taking the boat to go to spring camp, what kind of a boat was that?
It's they had all wooden boats, and most of those boats were built by the men who owned them. They would start from cutting the tree down, and they built some sort of a rafters up in the air, and then they whipsaw by hand.
I used
to watch them whipsaw. Someone would stand way up on the top and somebody down at the bottom, and they would whipsaw. And some people, there was one guy had a sawmill, so Sometimes they buy lumber from him too.
So they were like a plank boat.
Plank boat, yeah. The planks would be about 6 to 8 inches wide. And it probably about 6 or 7 planks in each side. And everything was, you know, start from the spruce that that's around close to our village. Everything was from close by. What they whip, whip saw.
Were those a flat bottom boat?
Yes, flat bottom. Some of them have, both sides have sharp point. That's the kind we always used to have. We had a sharp point, sharp on both sides.
So and then, yeah, a double ended boat, essentially.
And then we had square on both sides, or square on one side. So we had all kinds of boats.
A variety of different kinds.
Now and then. They use them till they get really old. And if you bump a little, it could make holes in them. That's what I used to think anyway.
And so they would take those to spring camp on a dog sled, basically.
Yeah. The sleds are built certain way. They call them Yukon sled. They're just flat, you know, with no basket.
Okay.
And they're built real strong. And they usually have two
sleds Yukon together.
Yeah, two Yukon sled. And they connect them with chains or something. Then they connect them. Then they put blocks in the middle of each Yukon sled. Then the boat on the top, and they had a what they call a gee-pool. And the guy who is holding the gee-pool usually have a wear skis, and the skis would be connected to the dog tow line, and this person ride the skis and steer the boat at the same time, and they would go over the hills and over all night till they get to their distance, till they get to the camp, and every family haul their boat out in the spring.
How many dogs would it take to pull a rig like that?
In those days, people didn't own very many dogs because it costs a lot. If a family have a lot of children, they wouldn't own too many dogs because they have to feed them.
Sure.
And each family used to have around 6 dogs. Some people have 7. Some have 5 and 4. And to haul, in order to haul the boats, they usually combine their teams, maybe like 10 or 11. Some use only about 8. The boats are big and small, too.
Different sizes.
Different sizes.
That's neat. That's really helpful to have that description of, you know, that whole way of doing things. Well, I think we should give Johnson a crack now and talk about what it was like when you were a boy. What was the yearly round like? Start wherever you want and tell us about it.
You mean like year round? What we do year round here?
Right.
It's almost the same thing what Bertha just said a while ago, you know, but the boat. Building boat, you know. Every spring, you know, in spring camp, after they go to spring camp, there's some people have no boat, and sometimes there's a different places that spring camp people go to. And Canoe Flat, there's about 3 different places where people go to, and between Canoe Flat and Alakaka, there's another river called Salatno. They usually be about 3 or 4 spring camps there too in between there. Sometimes about 4 families stay in spring camp, one place. Some people have no boat, so they knock a tree down and they build a like a platform, you know, and they throw a block on top there and whipsaw it. They buy nails and before they go to spring camp from store. Excuse me. Yeah. They all get together and build a boat in maybe 1 week or maybe less than that before muskrat hunting.
Wow.
So the people that have no boat, they have boat in the spring. And so everything was, they help each other. They do it the easy way, you know. Nobody think about money them days. They just want to help each other. Even if they have money, I guess they don't care, you know. They don't care for the money. They just want to help each other. So that's the way it was when we were growing up. And
tell us a little more about muskrat hunting. I think, you know.
Muskrat hunting?
Yeah, because people have talked to me about that being an important activity in the spring. And I'd like to know a little bit more about it. And maybe some of the people listening to the tape would too.
Yeah. The muskrat hunting, you know, muskrat was money to buy food in the summer, for the summer. It didn't cost, the muskrat didn't cost too much when I started to remember. It was 75 cents, 50 cents and 75 cents, you know, every spring. But they get about 80 to 200 muskrat, you know, in the spring, family sometimes. And what they do, as soon as they go to spring camp in April, around middle of April, and they start trapping muskrat in what they call muskrat house out in the lake. What people call a muskrat push up. There's big pile of moss like out in the lake. They punch a hole in one end, and there's a place where muskrat eat in daytime, you know, so they put a trap there. They start catching their muskrat. They never catch too much, you know, but enough to eat. Same time they get muskrat skins. And when water, after the ice melt, and they start shooting muskrat and trap muskrat same time from the shore. They tie two locks together, two little poles together, and they set a trap on top. Put a little moss and put a trap on top there, out, push it out in the lake. And when muskrat swimming along the shore, along the lake, he get on top of that little, two little poles, and sometimes they get caught in the trap and jump in water, and that's it. So they hardly lose muskrat.
Now they're using a commercial metal trap?
Yeah, number one. Number one steel trap, because that's what they used to use. At the same time, they get ducks, you know, in the spring. So I think the springtime was the best time of the year, because it's warm and they got this muskrat, ducks, and the little fish. Sometimes when the fish never come, you know, come up the river, they say fish come up the river every spring, you know, but in the lakes, people that have spring camp close to the big lakes, soon as there's water along the shore in the lake, then pike, big pikes come up on the side, on top of the ice, they come through the opening. And people start shooting them with 22. They just shoot right by it, and those big pipes, they just roll over, and all they do is pick them up. And that was the best meat in those pipes. So they start eating fish early in the spring. And some people would, if they don't catch pike that easy, then they got little trap in those little streams, you know, from the lakes. They got little fish trap they make up, could be about 4 feet long, I think, and about 10 inch in diameter on the side. They put a little funnel, they put a little funnel in the end, and the funnel opening would be about, I would say about 4 inches in diameter. So the pike getting there, he can't come back out, it's inside.
And what would that trap be made out of?
It was made out of spruce. The man split the spruce, you know, they knock spruce down about 4 feet long. They have to get certain kind. And they split it so many times, the kind of the top of the trees, you know, not the way inside, but the kind of top, about maybe about 2 inch or 2.5 inch
mm-hmm.
on the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one could split so small. They split to about 1/4 inch, I bet, you know.
Wow.
And they just split, it split just like rope almost.
Uh-huh.
I used to watch them while I was, I don't know how they could do that. They get so used to work on those small things, you know.
How did, what kind of a tool did they use for the splitting?
They use certain kind of tools. They had little plane. I don't know. They didn't have had plane before.
Mm-hmm.
White man's come. Let's set it up.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Yeah, the, I was telling you about the, how they make the little fish trap.
Mm-hmm.
They had little plane and they used their own pocket knife. And there's little cutting tool they used to make out of file. It kind of bended point on it, and it's kind of sharp.
Mm.
That was the real carving tool.
Mm-hmm.
You do everything with that one little piece of metal tool they make for them, for their own use, for their snowshoes and fish trap, everything, all those.
Is that
it's one tool, they make it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Is that what some people call a crooked knife?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
With it,
right.
Like
yeah.
Uh-huh.
In our language, they call them bahutsir.
Very good.
Yeah, bahutsir, they call it. Women would be getting those roots, you know, to tie, to make the fish trap with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you would call it. We call it hook. That's roots, you know, tree,
mm-hmm.
tree roots, little spruce tree
mm-hmm.
roots. They have to, by this time, they used to pick them now.
Mm-hmm.
When ground is thrown out little, and that, they say it's the easiest time to get it right now
mm-hmm.
in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ground is kind of, I don't know, the grass is not, it's dry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, when the grass roots is strong, you can't pull it. But right now, if you start pulling them, you can pull long ones
mm-hmm.
out. They,
mm-hmm.
they split them and clean them and roll them and put them away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they used to make fish trap with.
Mm-hmm.
They tie them together.
Mm-hmm.
Those little twig would be about maybe 1/2 inch apart.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure fish never go through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this ring, they make a long ring on it. All the way back on fish trap could be about 5 to 6 inches apart, that ring go around the trap. I'll show you the picture sometime.
Okay.
We got a picture up.
And this would be going around?
Yeah, going around the same time they put the
trap part.
The trap part. Same time they put those long string of wood, you know,
mm-hmm.
about 1/2 inch wide, you know.
These would be the split piece.
Yeah, split piece, yeah. And they make that ring go around on it. They splice them every so far. Mm-hmm. They run out. It's really fancy. And they used to do it so easy because that's the only way they make their living.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do it really easy.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be fancy.
Mm-hmm. When they put that trap between, you know, like in the little outlet from the lake, would it be the outlet or the inlet of the lake?
Outlet.
Which way would the trap be going in relation to the way the water flows?
Where the fish come in, the
mm-hmm.
fish is coming out from the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So the trap have to be open towards the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's closed down in the inlet way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's closed, so. When the fish come into the trap, they can't come back out because there's little funnel
mm-hmm.
opening about 4 inch in diameter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they can swim in.
Yeah.
But they can't turn around and swim in.
Yeah.
They have
fence on the both side to reach the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And the trap is kind of in middle of the river,
mm-hmm.
middle of the little creek.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with the big fish trap they used to make for summertime to dam the whole river.
Mm-hmm. What did they make the fence out of?
Out of this the jack spruce, I mean, spruce,
mm-hmm.
spruce tree, they know.
Mm-hmm.
They got a big, long tree, you know, the ones good. They know what kind. I mean, I don't think I would know what kind now because I never see people get those too long.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people now. Once we get to it, I bet we wouldn't know because they're so easy to split.
Mm-hmm.
They make fence out of those two.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. They put about what we call about 2x2 spruce. They split about 4 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And they split it down to about inch.
Mm-hmm.
Inch by half inch, about
mm-hmm.
thick, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what they make fence out of.
Kind of like slats?
Yeah, yeah. They put it about 6 inches apart all the way on that long twigs, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it reaches all the way out to the fish trap and all the way back to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides, they got posts every 2 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
They got posts. They pound it down in the gravel
mm-hmm.
so the fence could stay against that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, were those posts spruce too?
Yeah, they're spruce, they're mm-hmm. dry spruce,
mm-hmm.
burn trees, old ones. You
know. Mm-hmm.
And they're good posts, they drive them in with. I used to watch people drive them in with rocks too. They have certain kind of rocks that they pound, they drive those posts in.
Uh-huh. Sounds like hard work.
Mm-hmm.
In the gravel bottom.
Yeah. But they used to know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way they make their living in the summer for fish. Then it was sometime there was not too much fish. That's mm-hmm. when people really have hard time because mm-hmm. they just get so much. That's all them days, you know, when I was growing up. They talk about canneries, you know, out in the coast, someplace. You know, there was not much game lost them days, I bet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the canneries was getting all our fish what go up Yukon River and Keokuk River.
Mm-hmm.
And we hardly get king salmon or dog salmon. Then, as the years go by, I started to know that we get more salmon every spring because there's fish and game.
Mm-hmm.
They got a certain kind of season for
mm-hmm.
the fish and a certain time they close the canneries down there. That way we started getting fish up in
mm-hmm.
this area in
mm-hmm.
Keokuk River.
Hmm. I never thought about that. You know, the canneries being so far away, but that must have made quite a difference.
Yeah, and that still, it was interfering with the fish
uh-huh.
going up the river in the spring. Same way with the games when I was growing up, you know, there was not much game loss.
Mm-hmm.
Every time moose come around to Keokuk River area, they find the tracks, and once a time they track them down, kill the moose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for moose again, for the mm-hmm. for that area, no moose again.
Mm-hmm. So when you were young, most of the big animals were caribou?
Caribou
uh-huh.
and bear.
Uh-huh.
There was not too many bears too, because that's what people live on, you know,
mm-hmm.
most of the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
the people that could find bear in the den
mm-hmm.
in the winter time,
mm-hmm.
because bear was, they had a lot of fat on them when they hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
And some, what they call lucky people, that's all find them in the den in winter time,
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up. And that's the only kind of fat they had for the winter.
Mm-hmm. So that would be pretty important, I would think.
Really, yeah. And they never eat the whole thing by themselves. They always keep certain kind parts from the bear meat. They keep certain kind parts for the when they go back to gathering
mm-hmm.
sometime in late in spring, you know, like April.
Mm-hmm.
They all put those bear meat, bear fat and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
These would be the potlatches?
Yeah, that's what they call, that's what we call potlatch. They were so happy to come back to see each other again, because a lot of times people never come back from camp because flu or something come around, and some people get pneumonia, you know, and they go to camp happy, and sometime they're gone when they get back together.
That would be very sad.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a particular, you were talking about there being three or four main camps there in that Canoe area. Was there one in particular that your family used?
Yeah, there was, I'll name all those places where people had spring camp. There was Tehorben was one of the big spring camp where sometimes three or four families go in the spring. And Gornubanga was my parents, Billy Berkman and Caesar's spring camp. Sometimes there's about three or four families there too in the spring. Mm-hmm. And down what we call Kaltisola, there's another big spring camp. Was another about sometimes three families there too in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And down in Kaldudli, right much to where it run into Tsalatna, there's another big spring camp.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's four or five families there in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And up Tsalatna, Katsangri, close to Katsangri, there's another big spring camp.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's three families there.
Mm-hmm.
It's over in Canoe Flat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some more spring camps down around Totohbatna, that's close to where it run into Kaikuk River. There's another spring camp there. There's, I don't know, two or three families there. And in Elkakit, there's about two families spring sometime. It's out of town a little way. And up South Fork, Henshaw, Sagatakaka, there's sometime two families spring camp. And South Fork, there's Nuthodnalo. There's two families there almost all the time. And back South Fork, little ways to Kanunulugi, there's sometimes one family or two families. And back Fish Creek, there's about two families, where we call Tabiska and Mankohoko. That's the spring camp I remember all the time.
Boy, that's a good catalog. That's really neat to have that. And especially with all of the Koyukon names, too.
And that's while I was growing up. You know, I would say I have hard time, even it was not hard time, you know. We were hungry a lot of times, you know, but we eat good. Sometimes we're a little bit hungry because there's not that much food. Because today, when people work, you know, if they're still a little waste and you have a lot of food, that you don't know you have a lot of food.
You have kind of that safety net in a sense.
Then when I grew up, you know, then I got married. And I find out the difference, you know, because my grandpa told me, when you're alone, then you have hard time. You're hungry and everything. If you have somebody, if you get married, then you guys will kind of help each other and it'll make it kind of easy for you, he used to tell me. And right now today I find out, I kind of think back and look back, and I know he was right. When we got married and she started helping me, you know, we started trying to make a living together. We had some hard time, you know, but it was not that hard time. Because we have kids right away, then that was a lot of fun to have kids. We have our own kids, you know.
Let's go back and talk a little bit about the yearly cycle from when you were a boy. Bertha mentioned earlier that one of the things that people did in the spring, and I'm kind of guessing maybe it was a little earlier in the spring than the muskrat hunting and things like that that we've been talking about, was trap for beaver. How did people trap for beaver when you were a boy?
when I was small, I started remembering, you know, nobody, there was hardly any beaver around our area, you know. Mm-hmm. There was some different places, you know, but not in where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
There might be one beaver house and one next 10 miles or 20 miles away, that's all. And what they do is they can't trap them in winter time because nobody buy beavers, skin them days.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, if they shoot them, and they sell the beaver skin. But in winter time, they have nobody buying beaver skin, so they won't eat the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And they got no way to catch beaver because they don't know how to set trap for it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was small, I started to remember that they cut the beaver house right on top in winter time. And sometimes they catch one beaver out of that beaver house.
Mm.
No more.
Mm.
That was what they do, was just kill all the beaver, you know. They
mm-hmm.
cut the house.
Mm-hmm.
Those beaver move someplace and die off of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No,
they have no house.
Yeah, they don't know.
Yeah. Mm.
So there was hardly any beaver.
Mm.
Mostly muskrat.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. That's interesting. Why do you think that was? Do you have any idea why there were so few beaver then?
Because you see what I was just telling you, they cut the beaver house.
Oh, okay.
They killed the whole thing off.
So that there wasn't, every time they went after beaver in the winter, they killed the whole family.
Yeah.
I see.
Without catching any beaver sometime. Just cut the house and let the beaver die off someplace else.
I think they learn from doing that too, because I've never seen them do that, but I hear story about them. When they tell story, it seems like they never did it much.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they thought they were going to really eat good, and they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I guess they just quit doing that and they grow.
And then the beaver came back.
Yeah, then what happened was game warden come around.
Uh-huh.
Fish, and they call him game warden. You know.
Mm-hmm.
This was Sam White. Old Sam White. Everybody know that old man.
Yeah, I've heard about
him. Yeah. He come around. And when I was small, you know, child, I used to be scared of him. I thought he'll just grab us, you know. Game warden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He'd grab anything, I thought. But he did really good for our area.
Mm-hmm.
Bring the game laws, you know.
Uh-huh.
Nobody had book or anything what we're supposed to follow, but he just come and say that you're not supposed to cut beaver house, and
uh-huh.
you're not supposed to shoot cow moose with little calf.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things, you know, those people learn right away.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon I find out there start be moose, you know, few
mm-hmm.
moose around, because
mm-hmm.
they were kind of scared of the game warden, because he fly around once in a while. And we hear a story that come from different places, you know, maybe
uh-huh.
somebody write to each other and say, game warden catch them, somebody, you know, and took them to jail.
Uh-oh.
So that kind of worry people, I guess.
Sure.
So they let the moose go, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Soon moose started to grow little. So there's a lot of moose around home now, and beaver all over.
Mm-hmm. When did people hunt caribou?
Oh, that was, since I remember, there used to be caribou around.
Mm-hmm.
Alcacket.
What time of the year?
They come in October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because people used to leave in October, you know, while I was small, growing
mm-hmm.
up, when I started to remember. He said there's a certain area that caribou will come through
mm-hmm.
pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
So all the men would leave.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They would leave. And sure enough, the caribou come through the area where they know the caribou will come back. You know,
mm-hmm.
the caribou used to migrate from, I guess, from McKinley Mountain someplace.
Mm-hmm.
From that area up
mm-hmm.
towards Alcacket. And they would winter someplace around Canoe Flat.
Mm.
And in the spring, go back again for
mm-hmm.
years while I was growing. I don't know, somewhere around 1940, I guess, we started getting Arctic caribou mix.
Okay, sure.
Because the caribou run out from that area,
McKinley.
Caribou. I guess they killed them all off too.
Well, the Arctic herd would have been expanding at that time. The Arctic caribou herd had a big crash about the turn of the century. And then after about 1900 or 1920, it started to grow and it got bigger and bigger. And so that would help explain, I think. I'm just guessing, but that would seem to me maybe one of the reasons you began getting Arctic caribou about 1940. Where did your family go in the summer for fish camp?
For fish camp, the old people I grew up with, they never go to fish camp. They had summer camp where it was, there was hardly any fish. There was some dock salmon, but they were spawning already and they were this different color altogether.
Where was that summer camp?
It was in South Fork, way back. South Fork.
Does that place have a name?
It was Nicolachton. Nicolachton, that's where fish spawning, that's the name of the spawning area.
What kind of resources did they harvest during the summer if they didn't have access to the, you know, if they didn't do as much fishing as people on the main river?
Yeah, when I should remember, they had fish trap in the little creek in Among Oko. In the summer, now and then they have fish trap there, but not, they don't fish that much, you know. So I remember we eat mostly meat now and then, rabbit, porcupine, and bear meat. That's what I grew up with most of the time.
How did they preserve that bear meat?
Pardon?
How did they preserve that meat from the big animals?
They would smoke the bear meat, you know. It kind of gets old, you know, but we're so used to it when we're growing up with it.
Yeah.
And it didn't bother us anything.
Sure.
So in the fall when it gets cold and you start hunting for spruce and rabbit and different animals again for the winter. And caribou migrate in the fall next all over Canoody Flat and South Fork. All over, like it just come right through the whole place, you know.
Wow.
So that really helped people out for the winter.
Sure.
Everybody had a lot of food then.
No, in that summer camp that you were talking way up the South Fork, would you live in a tent at that point, or?
We had, they had house, my grandpa had house, so we used to live in the house.
Was this like a log cabin?
It was a little log cabin. It had floor, the whip saw, the lumber, everything by hand.
Wow.
It had floor, wooden bed, and window, two windows in that little cabin.
Glass window?
Glass window. There was four pane window.
Boy, getting those windows up there unbroken must have been a job.
Yeah. Then in summertime, I never see my grandpa block window or anything. I guess nothing come around this summer in that cabin. Of course, the window would be the same way when we come back in the fall again.
Sure. Didn't have to worry about bears.
No. They never break window, I don't think. Because every time they see bear, they kill the bear.
Then in the fall, where would your family go?
In the fall, then they go back to either Henshaw, South Fork, or Nicolachton, or Fish Creek. There's four places in Kaikuk River. And my real parents, who I find out they were my parents when I was 13 years old, they used to live in Allakaket. My mother used to live in Allakaket almost year round. My dad was the only one go to camp in the fall over Canoody Flat, trapping and hunting. And my mother would stay in the village all winter with my brothers. You know, they all go to school, my brothers. They all write and read, just except me, that's all, because I was given away. But I guess it didn't matter, because when I got married, my wife could read.
Uh-huh. Well, you learned other things, I think, that they probably didn't get a chance to learn. Don't you think there's some of that happened too?
Yeah, everybody learned the same thing, you know, when we were small, hunting and trapping, camping out and everything.
What about the winter time? Where did, when you were living with the old people, where did they live in the winter time?
The winter time, they never lived one place. They're always traveling.
Ah.
They're always traveling. You know, they come back to Ellicott for Christmas and New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week after New Year, then they go back to camp.
Mm-hmm. Did they have a house in Ellicott?
Yes, everybody had a house in Ellicott.
Uh-huh.
Most of the people, there were some old people that never had a house.
Mm-hmm.
But most people had their own house.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back to camp and go back to tent.
Oh, my.
And they never stay one place. Wherever they, somebody killed caribou or moose, they move there.
Uh-huh.
And that's their new camp. So we used to travel as far as about 75 miles away from Ellicott. That's what I remember when I was small.
Mm-hmm. And so you would be traveling by sled and dog?
Yeah, by sled and dogs. We walk even when we were small. I remember I was pretty small. I guess I walked with snowshoes ahead of dogs, because they had about four dogs, you know, with big sleigh and big family.
Yeah.
And all their belongings they hauled in that one sleigh. Their tent and stove, and everything. So we have to walk.
How many people would there be?
And where I grew up was there was about five of us. Because there was my brother, who I grew up with, you know, and my sister, but she died, you know, while she was small. So there was three of us, and my mother and who I called my dad, was my uncle, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you were with the older people, how many would there be traveling in the winter like that?
There was just three of us.
Just the three of you. Uh-huh.
Yeah. My old grandpa remarried when I was 15 years old. He was old. He got married again. So I have grandma, she was my aunt, my mother, my real mother's first cousin, but I used to call her grandma. I didn't know she was my mother's cousin.
Sure. And what was her name?
Her name was Julia. Nishnahutna.
Uh-huh.
Was her name.
Uh-huh.
I guess you never know. Lee Simon. You never met Lee Simon.
I've heard of him, but I've never had the chance.
That was his mother, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and then she died when I was 20 years old, I guess. My grandfather died, the old man that raised me, when I was 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was not going to live very long, you know, when he died, because I guess he really spoiled me, you know. He let me get away with a lot of easy time, you know. He never let me work. Once in a while, let me pack water or cut wood.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep all I want. He get up in the morning and he'd be waiting for me even we're going to travel someplace else. I would be sleeping. He'd cover me up a little more and keep warm. Finally, I guess I wake up and we go.
Uh-huh.
And when he died, when I was 19 years old, I thought I was going to die pretty soon too. I remember I used to cry for him and everything.
Must have been very important in your life.
Yeah, and right at the same time, my uncle died too, and my brother got left behind too. One of my first cousins, Tony Moses.
Uh-huh.
He had no dad, no mom.
Uh-huh.
Him and I get together and start go trapping.
That might be a good place. We're about out of tape here. Let me take a little rest.